Red, yellow leather.
No. Red, yellow leather. Sibilance.
Yeah, I can't. Apparently can't do those.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Who has a mixtape?
We.
Who needs a mixtape?
You.
Who makes a mixtape?
We.
Who needs a mixtape? You do.
Hello everyone and welcome to another fun-filled and exciting edition. I feel like I say that a lot, but they are very fun-filled and exciting editions of Mixtape. I'm Jason Emmett.
I'm Twisted Kid Matt.
And I believe you're lying, but I'm Stewie D too.
You believe who's lying?
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I don't know what's happening.
Fun-filled, exciting.
I was like, I don't know what's happening. Casey cannot be with us this week. So, we hope everything's going well, Casey. We will see you soon. So we did an episode a while back where we talked about like fake movie bands. We're kind of doing that again, but it was like the Blues Brothers, That Thing You Do, Spinal Tap, a few more on that episode. So we wanted to do something similar again this time around. So we're going to be talking about movies that are kind of based around fake bands and like the movie and the band and everything it encompasses. And I'm just going to pretend like I'm not having a small stroke in my own brain right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to start. A lot of these are going to be a little more recent, I guess, in the way that they're all going to be. I think most of these are from the 90s or the early 2000s that we're going to be talking about.
Right.
I don't think we're going back any further, but it's been a couple of weeks since I made the list, so I could turn out to be totally wrong. But we're going to start with a movie that Stewie says he loves, which is kind of interesting, because I didn't know that. I actually know that he likes a couple of these movies, though. But the first one we're going to talk about this week is from 2001, and that is a little film called Josie and the Pussycats. So, Josie and the Pussycats, like I said, came out in 2001. It was a Universal picture. Honestly, this movie had a really good cast. This movie, as a few movies we're going to talk about in the next couple of weeks, kind of bombed in the box office. But it's weird because a lot of them that we're going to talk about have really good casts, and this is one of them. We had Rachel Lee Cook, Tara Reid, Rosario Dawson. They all played the Pussycats. Also had Alan Cumming and Parker Posey in this movie, which is pretty amazing too, if one considers. I love Alan Cumming. He doesn't really do a lot anymore.
He's Nightcrawler, though.
He is Nightcrawler, which is...
He's just going now.
God damn it. I mean, when I have to think for a second, and then when the solution comes to my brain and it's not good...
like and then Stu's just...
You're fired.
laughing like that dog from... What was it, the Laugh Olympics or whatever?
Yeah. What was that dog's name? Muttley or something like that.
Something.
All right. So
it was like Snidely Whiplash.
Yeah. Maybe that was it, Snidely.
I don't know if you guys. Okay. First of all, Matt, have you ever seen Josie and the Pussycats?
No.
You should.
All right. So this plot of this movie is.
Yeah, his name's Muttley,
is
by the way.
Messed up. All right. This is a messed up plot. All right. So this movie is supposed to be like a music comedy kind of thing, right? And there's this record executive who fronts this boy band, right? And they hear a weird backing track on one of their singles and they ask about it. So he basically kills them in a plane crash. He bails out of the plane and kills the boy band. The band was called Du Jour, and the members of that band, and they're only in it for a couple of minutes. It's Seth Green, Donald Faison, and Brecken Meyer, and some guy. I don't know who he is.
Some other guy.
Some other guy. There you go.
He looks like he's on meth.
So this executive then starts, like, he decides he's got to have a replacement band for Du Jour, right? So he finds the Pussycats in the town of Riverdale. This is way before the whole, like, TV show and all that crap.
So yeah. Is Josie and the Pussycats an Archie related?
Yes, yeah. Oh. They're an Archie comic, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that part.
Then they became, like, a cartoon back in the, probably, like, 70s or something.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, 60s or 70s.
Yeah. So he starts looking for a replacement. He finds the Pussycats in Riverdale. He turns out he's been sending subliminal messages through the music, which is what the DuJour band heard. And he's trying to get people to buy stuff. That's the plot. That's why this guy is doing everything he's doing. So Josie and the Pussycats starts having some infighting in the band because they're trying to put Josie as the face. Because originally they're just the Pussycats, but they're putting her as the face of the band. Like, this is too much plot for this weird little movie, in my opinion. Anyway, they start to uncover this ridiculous plot that's happening. And there's a whole final scene and happy ending and all that stuff. And I can't remember, but I think it turns out the DuJour boys didn't actually die, or spoiler alert, but I could be wrong about that. But I think they come back at the end.
To a deserted island.
Yeah, something really ridiculous. So
I feel like I need to watch this movie now.
I'm going
to
say this.
It sounds awful, but I love it. Yes,
I'm going to say this. This movie was not great, and it did not do well.
It's very cheese.
But it is kind of silly cheesiness, like Stu said. There's something kind of endearing about how bad it is, if that makes sense.
The woman that's the record exec is very weird, and
It's Parker Posey, so she's always fucking weird.
Yeah, so like at the end, you get to see her pull off things that
basically weird. Alan Cumming is like, she's trying to be a singer too, I think, like, and she's wanting to be more famous than it's a whole weird plot thing. I will say this, the soundtrack for this movie is actually pretty good, so I would recommend checking that out. Like I said, this is 2001, which is weird because I actually thought it was in the 90s. I thought this movie came out in the late 90s, but it's 2001. There are reasons that the soundtrack is really good, and I'm going to kind of talk about those for a minute. All of Rachel Lee Cook's vocals are actually performed by Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo.
I had no idea about that.
So that's one thing. The other thing is Biff Naked performs most of the backing vocals on this. So these are two really, in my opinion, like really good musical artists. So
Should it have been Buck Naked?
No, it's Biff Naked.
It's Biff Naked. Okay.
Biff Naked, if you haven't ever heard, you should go check her out because she's actually really good. And like I say, Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo. So that's some pretty good pedigree right there. I mean, as far as vocals on this this soundtrack go. I also wanted to tell you guys some other cool stuff that I figured out. Tara Reid, they cast Tara Reid in this without auditioning her at all because American Pie had been such a huge hit. They just put her in it. But that's not necessarily the case for Josie or for Rosario Dawson's character.
Rachel Lee Cook is so hot.
Rachel Lee Cook is adorable, yeah.
Agreed, yep.
So Maggie Gyllenhaal and Zooey Deschanel both auditioned for Josie at one point in time. Now, you got to remember, this is much younger versions of them. I don't see it either, but they did audition. But Beyonce, Aaliyah, and Lisa Left Eye Lopez auditioned for Rosario Dawson's character of Valerie.
I don't see
that. And here's a dark joke we're going to cut.
Oh, my God.
They killed them off when they didn't make it into the movie. Except for Beyonce. She survived.
Why would you?
Dude.
You're the one who gets to cut it.
That's awful.
But yeah, all three of them.
When did they die?
You're talking
after auditioning.
You're talking much younger versions of all of them too.
Right.
Not that two of them got much older, but seriously though. So I mean, it might have worked. I don't know if I could see Beyonce in this. Lisa Left Eye Lopez maybe, and Aaliyah maybe. Aaliyah had done a little acting at this point.
But all we saw from Aaliyah was the Damned?
Romeo Must Die.
Romeo Must Die.
And Queen of the Damned.
Queen of the Damned, yeah.
It was more darker style.
Romeo Must Die was like an action movie, yeah. But I mean, she might have worked. Aaliyah was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, all three of these women were beautiful, and it's very sad.
That was stupid,
yeah,
that what she did.
It was a mistaken judgment, you know. And it's sad that happened because they were all very talented, you know. So, but Beyonce's still around, and does she really act? I mean, has she? I can't even.
She's an Austin Powers Gold member.
Yeah, she was.
Off the top of my head,
and it wasn't.
I'm sure, there's something else.
It works in that movie because I guess you don't really have to be that great of an actress. I don't really consider her a great actress.
Well, look it up
by any means.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever really seen her in anything that's
I don't
stuck out.
Think so either. Obviously, I can't. If it happened, I can't remember it.
I'm looking up on IMDb what has Beyonce been
but
in.
But I feel like
videos.
Choosing Rosario Dawson.
Oh, yeah. She's been in it. Dude, she's in The Lion King as the voice of Nala.
It doesn't count.
She's in Dreamgirls.
Oh,
she's in Obsessed.
Yeah, Dreamgirls, Jennifer Hudson, and Beyonce. Yeah, that's right. Never I forgot that. All about that. Yeah. I think they made the right choice in Rosario Dawson, though. Rosario Dawson is also beautiful, also can act. She's an incredible actress. Now, you can't really go wrong if you're putting Rosario Dawson in a movie.
No.
Which was
Green Clerks 2.
Which was instantly part of my problem with Clerks 3. I couldn't finish it. I could not finish Clerks 3.
I haven't seen it.
Well, spoiler alert, not really, because you're going to find it out in the first 2 minutes. She's dead.
The fuck? Okay.
Yeah, her character's dead. Rosario Dawson's character is just dead in it. Yeah, they just tell you that.
Yeah,
we can't get her back. You know?
I don't know. I don't know if that's what it was or not, but I don't know. It's got the point. It's just too many inside Kevin Smith jokes for me, and that's fine, but if you're not in on it, you can't just watch his movies and enjoy them anymore, because you got to be in on all the stuff he talks about on his 5 million podcasts, and I can't keep up with that. So I think now he has one with his daughter. And his other podcasts just sort of go away. He'll have them for a while, and then they just vanish. And it's just hard to keep up. So, but we're not talking about Kevin Smith. We're talking about movie bans. And this next one, we've talked about a few times in the last few months on this show, but never directly. It's just sort of come up because of other things. And that is the 1994. And by the way, that blows my mind that this movie came out in 94. I thought this came out a little later. 1994 movie, Airheads. Airheads is another movie that did really, really bad at the box office, but I love it. It's just not considered to be a great movie, but I love it.
Yeah.
This movie starred...
It's great.
Dude, it's so good. I just think it wasn't really appreciated for what it was, at the time. It should have been, because 94, right around that time, is when these kind of movies were kind of becoming hits. But it did not do well. This movie starred Brendan Fraser, Steve Buscemi, and Adam Sandler. They play a struggling rock band who end up taking over a radio station just to force that radio station to play their demo. They end up holding a bunch of people hostage. We had David Arquette in this movie, Joe Mantegna, Ernie Hudson, Judd Nelson, and Chris Farley. Every one of them show up in this movie, as does White Zombie, by the way. White Zombie is in this movie for, I think,
Lemmy.
Briefly, yeah, there's actually quite a few little small cameos. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny to look at David Arquette in this movie with his bleach blonde, his bleach blonde hair with all. I mean, it's very 90s hair. It's pretty great. So the name of their band in the movie is the Lone Rangers, which is actually pointed out in the movie as how ridiculous it is because there's three of them. So it's you're not exactly lone, are you? But they are all pretty much idiots in this movie. Steve Buscemi looks freaking evil in this movie, too. It's great.
He looks like Rex from Pantera.
He really does.
Kind of reminds me of Rob Zombie in a way.
Yeah, that too. He definitely pulls it off well. So does Brendan Fraser. Adam Sandler, not as much as the other two.
He looks like a Beastie Boy.
He does look like a Beastie Boy.
I'm just glad that he didn't put a wig on for this one and kind of just left it the way it is.
Look like Opera Man.
I think it kind of works for the movie in that he is sort of the outcast of the three. He's kind of dopey. It does kind of work. And we had talked about this a couple weeks ago. This movie got brought up where I think it was Matt who said something about, didn't they fill their squirt guns up with hot sauce? And they do. They fill their squirt guns up with hot sauce. They use squirt guns to hold up the place.
It was our band toys episode.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it was. And I think they paint the tips, but I can't remember. And then they fill them with hot sauce, and they only get found out. Just the tip, the way I like it. I think they get found out because, somebody shuts the tip of one of them in the door. And when it snaps it off and it starts leaking hot sauce, which I hate when that happens personally.
The discharge burns.
So again, this movie actually bombed at the box office, but over the years, it's kind of grown a pretty loyal fan base. It's become a cult classic. I actually miss comedies like this a lot personally.
It almost seems like they don't do anything like this anymore.
They really don't. And so I have a little breaking news real quick for you guys in case you don't know. I just heard this last night, but... it has been confirmed. Oddly enough, it was confirmed by Drew Barrymore, and I'll tell you why this is odd, because I don't know what part she plays in it. Maybe she's going to be in this one. Billy Madison 2.
I heard something about that.
Is happening, but I think it's happening with Netflix, and I'm just going to be honest, man. I don't expect it to be good.
I mean, hopefully there's a cameo of Bob Barker.
Yeah, I mean, they could probably do something. That might be neat, actually, if they did a little something.
Do like the ghost of...
They'll probably show like...
Force ghost.
It'll be like a news report, like, and if you recall this outing with Bob Barker, they'll just show the scene again, maybe. But one, I don't know why Drew Barrymore, unless she's going to be in it, which I guess is possible that she's in it.
Her and Adam Sandler have got
they're very
quite
close.
The history of being in movies.
Well, they're really good friends and very close, but she wasn't in the first one, so I don't know. And two, I've been like, when I watch his stuff that he tries to do now, it's like, it's not Adam Sandler anymore. And it's like, it's too toned down. And like, how are you going to do Happy Gilmore if you're not that crazy guy? You got to be that crazy guy. That's kind of like part of it. So we'll see. We'll see. As more stuff comes up, I'm sure we will discuss it here and amongst other places. If you're not checking out our YouTube channel, you should be, because like, that's one of the things we do a lot now is talk about movie news and upcoming stuff. So you should be checking it out. Also, this video is up there too. Before we go into our next movie, we're going to take a really quick break and give a little shout out word from our sponsors, BustedTees.com. Hey everyone, I want you to check out our sponsor, BustedTees.com. They sell really cool clothing and apparel, all of it inspired by your favorite shows, anime, sci-fi, video games, movies. That's BustedTees.com. And then at checkout, you want to use my name, Jason, 25945. That's all one word, Jason 25945. That's going to get you a discount, and it's going to help this show. That site again, BustedTees.com, like t-shirts, and that code again, Jason 25945. BustedTees.com, designs that pop culture. All right, so we are back, and we are going to go into our next film. Again, a lot of these are from the 2000s. I didn't really realize putting this together, but this one comes from 2003. This is a little film that I think most people actually really like. That is 2003's School of Rock. This film stars Jack Black, Joan Cusack, Mike White, Sarah Silverman, and iCarly.
Is that her actual name?
No, it's Miranda Cosgrove. Is her real name iCarly? Like,
yeah, she was made in a factory.
They bumped this processed.
She's actually part robot. She's a cyborg, possibly.
All right, I have some things I really want to discuss with you guys about this movie, but I'm going to give the real quick plot synopsis. So Jack Black is a down on his luck and out of money guy. Like, I don't know what he does with his life, but he has no money. So his friend actually is offered a job as a substitute teacher. He overhears it, and he decides he's going to pretend to be that guy and go be the teacher so he can earn a paycheck.
Which is a crime, by the way.
Okay. That's what I want to talk about. So he ends up convincing the kids in class to start a band instead of actually learning anything so that they can play at the Battle of the Bands. This movie was a smash hit. This actually really helped establish Jack Black's career. It really did. I mean, he was around and he was starting to be known, but this was kind of like his first like solo outing where people were like, okay, we should give this guy movies. This movie spurred a string of actual music schools, like real life music schools. Right. School of Rock is a real thing now. And there's also a Broadway musical based off of this now that is very, very famous and supposedly really good. But I want to discuss how this plot doesn't make any sense. Now, I really, really like this movie. This movie's a lot of fun, right?
That's great.
But come on, man. First of all, how can you take a job at a school and them not really get any photo ID to make sure you are, in fact, the person you claim to be? Yeah. And 100% this guy's going to jail, right? Like 100% he's getting arrested.
No matter if you do
fake
win
yourself
the battle
to be around
bands.
Kids.
Like, right, you're right. You were in trouble. You are not doing jail time. Like, I love this movie. It's a lot of fun, but I don't care how nice you are. Like, the parents would be fucking livid. Like, I would be. I'm like, do what now? And the school's probably getting sued, right?
So what you're telling me is a guy came in, spent a lot of time around our children, and you had no idea who he was?
Took them out of the school to all kinds of places, lied to you about where he was taking them, and, like...
And that van definitely smells like weed too. So you
think like this? Not only is this dude doing jail time, this school is getting sued like fucking crazy. Right?
It's getting shut down.
Yeah. Also, Stu, if you stole my identity and went and faked a job, I don't know how we would still be friends, but I don't know how close we would be afterwards. Like, so you did what now? You could have gotten me in trouble. Oh, and man.
People believed you were me? Like, for real? Like, they actually thought you were me?
I mean, nowadays, what does that maybe, say about me? But back then, probably not.
It's just a weird plot, but it's fun.
You said this was 2003, right?
Yeah, 2003. Yeah.
Okay, 20 years definitely ago. Background checks are definitely happening in the world because it's 2 years after 9/11
has happened.
Kinda, oh, yeah.
They've heightened that up.
Now, in all fairness.
Not only that, but, like, you know, Columbine had happened. What, like 3 or 4 years before that?
Yeah.
Listen, so, yeah, like listen, tightening up security in schools is...
In all fairness, somebody might be losing their mind right now. I have not watched this movie in a long time. I do not recall him having a fake ID. Maybe he did. I don't think so, though. I don't recall that at all. But if that happened, it's been a while since I saw this. It doesn't matter. He's still going to jail. But this is a fun movie. It's a lot of fun. The music's great. Jack Black is a lot of fun in it. Joe is Joan Cusack. She's really great in this movie, too. And this is weird. Every once in a while, you'll see Sarah Silverman pop up in something where she plays like the subdued version of her. I've been watching, rewatching
Wreck-It Ralph,
the series Monk. Well, even then, Penelope is sort of silly and crazy, right?
It's Vanellope.
Vanellope, that's what it is. I'm sorry, you know your Wreck-It Ralph better than me. You got to have something in life, Matt.
All right, I know.
Your Wreck-It Ralph knowledge is... He's like, that's what I'm good at, all right? Growing a beard and Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, both at the same time.
I've been rewatching the series Monk, and she's in a couple episodes, Sarah Silverman, and it's just so weird to like see these early, like, I forgot. There's a ton of people in Monk, by the way. It's like every few episodes, somebody, Snoop Dogg is in an episode of Monk, for Pete's sake.
He's in everything.
He is in everything.
I've never seen a single episode of Monk.
It's a great show. It's just like all those shows, though. Like, why is it so many? Now, he was an ex-homicide detective, and he works with the cops, the police. They hire him as a consultant, but still, people around him just die like crazy.
Like Batman?
Or Murder, She Wrote, actually?
Yeah, he's got like a lot of problems, especially after his wife died. Yeah, Murder, She Wrote. Like, she's totally killing everybody, thing. Right?
Yeah, she's
the murderer, because she's just a writer, and everybody around her keeps getting killed. She'll go on a holiday, and like 12 people get murdered.
It's like, stop writing!
Stop writing. You're killing people, you son of a bitch. Stop.
It's like, it's fucking in the mouth of madness. She's so cane, just killing everybody.
Wouldn't the final episode of Murder, She Wrote been great if you just turned out Angela Lansbury had been her all along, just framing the shit out of people.
Well, nowadays, you know that probably would have been
if they did Murder, She Wrote now, it would be a podcast, just a true crime podcast.
Do you want me to go way off the rails for a second?
Absolutely.
The final episode of St. Elsewhere, turns out it was a little kid having a dream, right? Which everyone was like, what the fuck?
But isn't that the snow globe thing?
Shouldn't.
Let's deep dive on that one.
But I know it had something to do with a little kid and a dream and whatever. All I know is that kid's going to be an excellent doctor if he already knew all that doctor knowledge shit that for years he's been like, hire that kid. That's Doogie Howser right there, motherfuckers. This kid's smart.
St. Elsewhere, is that a soap opera?
Another great show that would never happen.
St. Elsewhere, no, it was a medical drama show. It wasn't.
Before ER?
Yeah.
Way before.
I didn't watch it. I don't. I just know the ending is really famous because it's so bad and everybody
gets
so mad.
Weird tangents related to Say No Elsewhere. Apparently, there's like a whole like flow chart of everything, like all these different shows that connect to Say No Elsewhere that all take place in this kid's dream.
Really?
So I mean, it's like a ton of different shows that are all connected somehow.
That's bizarre stuff,
like,
man.
Like spinoffs, and
that would be a great episode for us to do.
Yeah,
shows that had great endings and shows that had really bad endings.
Like, I thought you were gonna say shows that connected to other shows.
Just saying, like, Elsewhere.
No, it's like, but like Perfect Strangers.
So full
leads into Family Matters.
Yeah, Well, those were all the that all leads those
into
well, Mork and Minnie,
Step by Step, and
Die Hard.
Step by Step, all those shows were connected.
Was it Mork and Minnie and Happy Days?
Mork and Mindy came off Happy Days. Yeah. It was one of three shows to come off Happy Days. Mork and Mindy.
And I think all of these shows were
Joni Loves
about
Chachi and Laverne and Shirley all came off of Happy Days, actually.
And then it became Charles in Charge when then, Chachi had to change
the Karate Kid. Where are we going? I don't know where we're going. Yeah. The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Ralph Macchio?
No, Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, yeah. He played Arnold, yeah. Well, not Arnold.
I mean, it wasn't directly.
He ended up like coming into the
It's like the weird epilogue of Happy Days. So it's like what happens.
We actually have more movies to talk.
Arnold goes on to.
Oh yeah, to that's teach right. Karate we do have
to
more.
A kid. It's Henry Winkler is the bad guy in Karate Kid. It would have been a totally different movie. Hey. All right.
Hey. All right. Right. Kid in the face.
We have another movie. We have more movies, believe it or not. I'm actually looking forward to talking about this one because I don't know of a lot of opportunities to talk about this movie in this show. And this is a very divisive movie for a lot of people out there because I know a lot of people really liked it, like Stewie, and I like it myself. A lot of people didn't, and I think the people who didn't weren't really in the world. Like the world of music or the world of... like we'll say metal bands or hair bands. So that this movie is Rockstar from 2001. This movie did not do well in the box office. I'm starting to notice a trend here. I think I mentioned it earlier. This is Mark Wahlberg and Jennifer Aniston. Mark Wahlberg is a singer in a tribute band for the 80s group Steel Dragon. I always thought that was kind of a corny name, but there are reasons why they chose some of the names in this.
Sounds like a roller coaster.
He starts having issues with the band and they exchange him for another guy from another tribute band. Meanwhile, the lead singer of the original band, Steel Dragon, decides he's had enough with the band. So he gets into it with the band and they fire him. So then that band sees a tape of Mark Wahlberg singing and he ends up getting hired on by the band. Sounds complicated, but we'll talk about that in a second because it's actually inspired by some real stuff that happened. What follows after that is a life of drugs, debauchery, until finally Wahlberg's character hits a wall, walks off stage in the middle of it, hands the mic over to somebody else.
And then becomes Kurt Cobain.
And becomes an indie singer. Yes. I didn't hate this movie. There's a lot of cool stuff to talk about when it comes to this movie, and I really want to get some thoughts on it.
I know that it's depicted off of a real band.
So it's actually
Steelheart, I believe.
Yes, so that's where that's why the name Steel Dragon came about was because of Steelheart. This is actually based loosely around Tim Ripper Owens, who was the lead singer for Judas Priest. Judas Priest he left the band temporarily and he was replaced by Rob Halford who had been in a tribute band originally. That's how That's how they found him. Yeah.
Wait. Hang on.
I'm sorry. It's loosely based on the life of Tim Ripper Owens, who was in a tribute band when Rob Halford temporarily left Judas Priest. I said their names back.
Okay.
I thought you were saying Rob Halford was in a tribute
band. He was. For Judas
Ripper Owens took over.
That is absolutely.
Rob Halford.
That is absolutely what I said, but that's not what I meant.
Mandela effect.
I meant it totally backwards. Rob Halford temporarily left Judas Priest, and they found Tim Owens he was a singer for a tribute band, and that's how he got the gig. But here's the thing: Judas Priest has come out and they've totally disavowed this film because they said they were denied any creative control, and they said most of the story ended up being totally fabricated, and it isn't what actually happened. Aside from the whole like, we found him in a tribute band and he took over temporarily. So, yes, dude, the band Steelheart has a song in the movie, and all the vocals were actually performed by, and I'm going to try to say this dude's name, Miljenko Matijevi, who is the lead singer for Steelheart.
Nailed it.
So, thank you. Thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Honestly, I don't know.
He's like, that sounds right to me. He's the lead singer of the band Steelheart, and so everything you hear Mark Wahlberg sing is actually him. So that's why I think you're right. That's why they went with Steel Dragon. So the band Steel Dragon is made up of some really cool people that you might may or may not have known. It's Jeff Pilson from Foreigner. So the fake band in the movie, Jeff Pilson from Foreigner and Dokken, Zach Wilde from Ozzy, you know,
and Pantera
and Black Label. Yeah.
And Pantera.
Jason Bonham, who is the son of John Bonham.
Right.
And then Dominic West, who's an actor. He's the other member of the band. So the final song in the film.
It is, isn't it?
The final song.
I haven't seen this movie, by the way. So, but yeah, that's definitely Zach Wilde.
So the only other person who sings the vocals for Mark Wahlberg is Brian Vander Ark. Do you guys know who Brian Vander Ark is?
The name does not recall.
He's the lead singer for the Verve Pipe. So the final song in the movie when he's in the coffee house performing is actually Brian Vander Ark from the Verve Pipe who does that. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. There's a lot of – that's what I said. I think people who are kind of into the world of like big hair and this type of metal really enjoyed this movie because a lot of it reflects to kind of real stuff. Like this is how – this movie is not – this is a very kind of dirty film and like, it's not, I wouldn't call it a happy film. I think it's showing the, like, this is the life he thought he wanted until he got it. And it's just like, it's miserable. And I think it's supposed to kind of show that side of how difficult it can be to be in this type of band. And even though you have the fame and everything, like how hard it is on you because it's a lot of like drugs and drinking and weird sex. There's a really famous scene in this movie where the two of them have sex with this girl all night. And in the morning, that girl gets up, walks over, stands up and pisses in the toilet because it's not a girl at all. That's what I mean. This movie just really plays on the like stereotypical lifestyle of like these really heavy metal bands and the mental drain it can take on you after time. So it's pretty good. You should give it a watch, Matt. It's a pretty good movie, but don't expect to feel good. Actually, the ending to me always felt a little tacked on feel good. Like it was a little too like, we got to do it happy.
Test audience who's like, this is really depressing.
Stu said he became Kurt Cobain, but he definitely becomes a coffee house indie rocker.
Well, he was wearing the cardigan. And,
yeah, he did kind of look a little like Kurt Cobain at the end, but yeah, it's an interesting movie. People should check it out. So the next two movies we're going to talk about real quick go a little outside the vein, but not really. I want to talk about a movie that came out in 1992 and then one that came out in 1993. I didn't realize these movies came out back to back.
They were that close?
I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that, yeah.
That would be Sister Act and Sister Act 2. So let's talk back a little bit about Back in the Habit. What a great...
Sounds like a Die Hard sequel.
Die Hard 2, Back in the Habit. So Whoopi Goldberg is a lounge singer in Reno, Nevada, where she is also messing around with the mobster club owner, who is played by Harvey Keitel. I love Harvey Keitel. So she sees Harvey Keitel kill a guy, and now he wants to off her, too, because of it. He wants to take her out. So
there'd be no witnesses.
She turns.
How many witnesses? None.
Shut up, Matt. God, you guys in your... you have a bad habit of cracking bad jokes.
Forgive me, I've sinned.
So she turns to the police, right?
Yeah, and they place her
in witness protection, disguising her as a nun, which is very weird, but whatever. So through a great deal of hilarity, she ends up joining the choir, and then she ends up leading the choir. The choir starts to become a big deal in the community because they're singing like more fun. Like this church was dead. Nobody was coming to the church. But because she gets this choir like up and running and singing more fun songs, the church starts getting really popular, and they start getting a lot of attention. And that attention gets her found out by the mob, et cetera, et cetera. You could kind of deduce what happens from there. I think we get a scene where nuns are like punching dudes or something. It would be really cool if that is what I just nun fight at the end. This movie was a major hit.
I would watch the shit out of that.
Like just nuns.
Nun fight.
Like
just
kung fu nuns.
Is this where nunchucks like, come
nunchucks?
In?
Ninja nuns from Norway.
Actually, wait a minute. Hang on, nunchucks. Stu. I'm gonna pause you right there.
Nunchucks.
I have a movie.
Why is there not a Chuck Norris movie called Nunchucks?
Listen, there is a movie. It is a nunsploitation movie that I actually own a copy of it. I'll have to track down what it is.
Nunsploitation.
I'll put it on the screen.
Didn't even know this was a genre.
It's like a short film. It's like 15 minutes. But there is literally a scene where a nun comes out and uses nunchucks that are crosses.
That's fantastic. Number one.
It is awesome.
Yeah. But why is there not a comedy with Chuck Norris as a nun called Nunchuck?
Chuck. Make it happen.
Oh my God.
Friend of the show.
Nunchuck.
Friend of the show. I don't know if we associate ourselves with Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
He associates with
he
us.
He associates himself with us.
Yeah.
Well, this movie was
by the way, Chuck Norris is coming to the Cincinnati area soon.
Yeah, good for him.
He's trying to sell those jeans again.
Unlike the rest of these movies, this movie was a major hit. This movie made $200 million, like earned $200
million. That's I actually had the soundtrack budget. For it. Surprisingly.
This was around the time that Whoopi was real big, right?
Yeah, 92. So, yeah, I mean, we should do a whole Whoopi Goldberg because Stu and I both love Jumping Jack Flash and Burglar. Like
they used to do that comic relief thing.
Yeah, every year it was her and Billy Crystal and Robin Williams.
Yeah. Was that around this time too?
Yeah, it would have been going on still here. So some cool stuff about this movie. This movie was actually offered to Bette Midler. She turned it down. I want to bring this up because
another Hocus Pocus cast member is already in the movie.
True. Kathy Najimy is in this movie, right. In 1993, an actress named Donna Douglas and her partner, Kurt Wilson, actually filed a $200 million lawsuit against the Walt Disney Company. They also filed it against Whoopi Goldberg and Bette Midler. They claimed the film was plagiarized from the book A Nun in the Closet. So this was looked into. This is crazy, guys. Over 100 similarities were found between this movie and the book. And they were offered a $1 million settlement, but they declined it. And then they lost the case. See, they wanted $200 million. To me, you're getting a little greedy. It gets a little crazier. That was in 1993. In 2011, a nun named Delois Blakely, I think was her name, she filed a lawsuit against the Walt Disney Company and Sony Pictures, claiming that the Harlem Street Nun, an autobiography she wrote in 1987, was the basis for the film. She said execs had been interested in it, and she wrote a synopsis. And turned it in, and then she didn't hear anything, and next thing you know, they make a movie. She asked for $1 billion in damages, but the New York Supreme Court dismissed the lawsuit. Maybe if you guys wouldn't have been...
How many years was this after the fact?
This was 2011.
And she didn't notice any similarity in 1993.
Well, it's possible she didn't watch movies.
Always, yeah, and it's also not always easy to file a lawsuit. Sometimes you got to find lawyers who are willing to take it on, because you can't pay them, so it's pro bono.
I mean, that's fair and
but,
all,
but maybe you don't
think
ask
if she was a nun herself.
Listen,
maybe you ask for $1 million, not $1 billion, and then they settle with you. In the first ones, they would have settled with them.
A million, and then royalties, maybe.
It's just crazy.
Something
$1 billion. She thought,
who thinks that number was actually capable?
Yeah, like for a movie that didn't make anywhere near, even the two of them combined, I don't think made that. Anyway, the first film did really, really well is what we're saying. Yeah. And so
inspired
why not?
Drag queens all over the world.
So why not make a second one, right? Not only did they make a second one, they made it the year after. But to me, the second film felt very forced. It didn't really have the same flow to it because it didn't make sense why she would. Well, they tried. This movie actually did well. It made money, but it didn't do as well as the first one. This time, the nuns need help getting their high school choir up to snuff. Are they going to lose their school? So they ask Whoopi Goldberg to pose as a musical teaching nun, which she does. And in it, she discovers a young Lauryn Hill, which very young Lauryn Hill is in this movie.
With her RBF right there.
And together they overcome the odds and save the day. Hallelujah. Everybody's happy, right? So this one's a lot more of the young youth choir in it. Also, even though for some reason Matt does not think it looks like her, it totally does to me. A very young Jennifer Love Hewitt is in this movie.
Why does that girl always look pissed off?
That's what he just said.
She has RBF.
For some reason, Matt doesn't think this looks like a young Jennifer Love Hewitt, but it totally is.
Totally
a young,
does.
Yeah, it does to me too. She's just very young, dude. This is 93.
You just can't see the big boobs.
Yeah. She probably didn't have them yet. Yeah. Critics didn't really like this one nearly as much. I enjoyed the music in the second one a lot, but the plot was paper thin at best. There really wasn't much of a plot. It was just an excuse to kind of get them back together.
I honestly say I didn't really watch either one.
The first one's funny. It's weird because it came out around a time that there was a movie called Nuns on the Run, which is a great movie, which is about two dudes that hide out as nuns because they're being chased. And it has one of my favorite scenes ever.
Twisted Kid episode coming down the road about Nuns on the Run. We have got to discuss that.
I love Nuns on the Run. Yeah. And it's one of my favorite because he's trying to teach him how to do the what do you call that? The, you know, the cross when you cross yourself because they're Catholic. Spectacles, testicles, wallet, watch. That's how he teaches them. Spectacles, testicles, wallet, watch.
Like,
or watch, wallet.
For the record, you're asking the Jewish guy
about Catholicism. Catholic stuff. Yeah. And he knew. He said it. He said it, though, if you heard him. He's like, yeah. I'm multi-faith, all right? Hey.
Which, by the way, Connie and I watched Dogma about a week ago.
Impossible to
find. Bring Kevin Smith back.
It's great. It's
Dogma is a great movie.
That's true.
Yeah.
You can't watch it anywhere other than a DVD you currently own.
Really? Because he has a deal with one of the streaming services. I'm surprised it's not on there.
Not that one. And I'll tell you real quick exactly why. It's because Harvey Weinstein owns the rights to it. And there's videos of him talking about the only way that they will actually be able to get the rights back is if the lawyer finally agrees to give it back, because he's been trying to get the rights back forever, even after Weinstein's in prison. The only way he'll get it back is if a lawyer finally agrees to a number that they're not going to do. But I guess even Matt Damon and Ben Affleck got involved with trying to get the rights back for him.
Yeah.
And the other way that he could get it back is if Harvey Weinstein dies. That's the only way. It will revert back to him when Harvey Weinstein dies. And let's use our powers for good.
Harvey Weinstein. We have officially talked about him on this show, and we know what happens when we talk about certain people on this show.
Yep.
Harvey Weinstein.
Let's hope that our Harvey Weinstein forces Trump, are used Harvey for good this time.
Yeah, he's pretty much a walking pile of shit, too. So,
well, he's not walking. He's in a wheelchair now.
Well, whatever. Because fuck that guy. All right. We have one more movie to talk about. One more movie. This is a great movie. This one came out in 2000. Here's the thing. Didn't do well in the box office. I didn't know that. Critics love this movie, but it didn't make a lot. This is Almost Famous from 2000. Awesome movie.
Is this from the same creators as...
This is Rockstar? From Cameron Crowe. No.
I thought Rockstar.
They do have a very similar feel to them.
I get like, where...
Even though I have not seen... I think...
I get where you would...
Didn't they come out around the same time, though?
Well, this is 2000, and Rockstar I think was Rockstar 2001. It came out like the following year, so...
Maybe that's why I was thinking this.
I think the look of the film is very similar, but no, they're not. They're not associated in any way. This was written and directed by Cameron Crowe. It's loosely based on his own experiences as a kid when he wrote for
Rolling Stone
magazine. So it's loosely based around that. The movie itself tells the story of a 15-year-old outcast who wants to be a rock journalist. So he starts writing for this underground paper in San Diego. He's asked to check out and review a Black Sabbath concert. And someone reads that and without knowing... They hire him. The editor of Rolling Stone says, hey, I want you to write an article on the opening band for that Black Sabbath concert, which was this band called Stillwater. And he decides to send him on the road with Stillwater. But at the time when he asks him, he doesn't know that he's only 15. So this 15-year-old goes on tour with this band, Stillwater. This takes place in the 70s, obviously. So this movie is a look at a band through the eyes of an outsider who managed to accidentally find his way inside. I know that sounds weird, but that's what it is. And this movie feels real to me, which is probably a lot, like you said, Rockstar kind of feels real to me too. Russell Crowe actually said the band, which in the movie is made up of Jason Lee as the lead singer.
You mean Cameron Crowe?
Yeah, no, Russell Crowe. Yes, Cameron Crowe.
I was like,
wait, what?
Hang on.
Sorry, yeah, Cameron Crowe. Actually, the band is made up of Jason Lee as the lead singer, Billy Crudup as the guitarist Russell Hammond, who is actually who most of the movie focuses on. Mark Kozelek is the bassist in the movie, and Ed Valancourt played the drummer in the movie. So he actually has said that the band itself was a composite of a couple of different bands he'd had experiences with on his time on the road. At the time, Cameron Crowe. So, Stu, you're going to like this if you didn't know this, which I'd be shocked if you didn't, but you might not have. At the time when he made this movie, he was married to Nancy Wilson of Heart. And Nancy Wilson actually wrote a few of the songs for the movie, and they had Peter Frampton serving as a technical consultant. So that's probably why the music, the band, everything feels so real for the time period, because they had people that were involved in the time period. And the song Fever Dog in the movie feels like it should have been a real song, because Nancy Wilson freaking wrote it. So when you have one of the members of Heart writing you some of your music, and you have Peter Frampton consulting in all the technical aspects, you're probably going to get it right, I would hope. So Crow has actually confirmed that the Golden God scene, which is one of the most famous scenes in the movie, where Billy Crudup's character's like up on top of a motel, and he's like, "I am a golden god," and he runs and jumps off and dives into the pool. He says that was inspired by Led Zeppelin lead singer Robert Plant, who he once heard him over. He heard him over saying the phrase, "I'm a golden god." Greg Allman has said he believes a lot of the film scenes were actually based on Crow's time spent with the Allman Brothers Band. And he gives that scene in particular as a reference, stating the jumping off the roof into the pool, that was Dwayne from the third floor of a place called the Travel Lodge in San Francisco. My brother wanted to do it again, but the cat who owned the place came out shaking his fist, yelling at him. We told that story all the time, and I have no doubt that Cameron was around for it. So probably he used the two. I remember Dwayne Allman jumping off the roof, and I remember Robert Plant calling himself a golden god, and he merged the two together. So a lot of that's why this movie feels so real to me. So Penny Lane was played by Kate Hudson, and she was actually based off a real life person named Penny Lane Trumbull. Actually, she was based off a couple of different people, but primarily Penny Lane Trumbull. So she was based off a real person as well. And there were a group of women. I forget what they call themselves in real life, but in this, they're the Band-Aids. They are not groupies. They are Band-Aids. They get really ferocious about that in the film. Obviously, we all know the really famous scene in the bus, the tiny dancer scene in the movie, where they're all sitting in the, this scene has become infamous too, where they're all sitting in the bus, all kind of just wore out from the road, and somebody starts singing Tiny Dancer, and before you know it, the whole bus is singing Tiny Dancer by Elton John. This is really cool because a few years back I was at a concert. It was Better Than Ezra opening up for, actually it was KT Tunstall, and then Better Than Ezra, and then Bare Naked Ladies. And the guys from, it was funny because I went to see Bare Naked Ladies, but Better Than Ezra stole the night, man. They were fantastic. And he was out there talking. He's like, "So the other night, we're on the tour bus. We're just chilling after a concert. Everybody wore out. And the boys from Bare Naked Ladies came on the bus with us." And he's like, "And we just started singing." And he starts singing Tiny Dancer. And but before you know it, the whole crowd is like just singing this Tiny Dancer with him. And it was really cool. And it's all because of this movie. I believe that, well, I don't just believe, every musician I know, especially musicians that were alive during this time period, loves this movie. And it's just one of those, I think it's like just captivated musicians and music lovers for years. And yes, it did not make a lot of money at the box office. Critics, like I said, critically, this movie was...
Did it make any money on sales afterwards?
I don't know. I don't think overall this... I think it pretty much lost money overall. It's just one of those things where you can have a really good movie. Could be when it was released. Could be all kinds of stuff. Like, I don't remember what was released right around it. Could have been swamped out by other movies.
But do a quick tribute to Not a Bomb real quick. Shout out Not a Bomb, by the way.
Do they talk about this?
Check them out.
This would
I don't know. Oh. I'm gonna look it up, see what
because it bombed at the box office. That's a interesting thing. If they haven't, they should.
It's got a 7.9 on IMDb, 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 90 on Metacritic. Like it's highly rated. It did $47.4 million in the box office at the time. I'm not entirely sure how Not a Bomb does all this research, but it's probably a lot more.
Well, that's what their show's about, man. So
yeah, everybody go check it out. And hey, Troy and Brad, if you hear this, do an episode on Almost Famous.
Almost Famous is a great movie. And like I said, critically, it's acclaimed. And I think people who have seen it love it. I just don't know if it's just people didn't go to the box.
Or do one on Josie and the Pussycats.
I mean, it's a bomb too. You can
do that.
You guys could literally
do
it on
an entire month.
Almost everything on this show that we talked about this week, except for School of Rock and Sister Act, you guys could talk about because they all bombed at the box office. And maybe that's telling though. Maybe that's
$60 million and made worldwide $47 million.
It's just that, so I guess
a bomb.
The '90s just didn't really take to
this
music
was these
movies.
Most of these would have been in the 2000s, and that's the question,
sorry,
right? Is it just a era that they tried to come out in that people just weren't going to see them? Like, I don't. That's a good question, and I'm kind of curious.
Do we have ones coming out now these days that are successful?
Yeah, but most of them these days aren't based. They're all the music movies coming out are based off real people, like. And some of them do okay, and some of them don't. Like, I don't think Whitney did well, but I heard it wasn't very good. I don't think One Love did as well as they had hoped it would do, which is the Bob Marley one.
I mean, I know.
I heard it wasn't great.
Got,
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Amy Winehouse coming out.
I know that was on Netflix.
Bohemian Rhapsody was at the theater, and it did great.
Okay.
So much so that they're like, we should do a sequel. And I'm like, no, you shouldn't. Like, no. We don't.
How do you do a sequel when it's done?
Well, he didn't die in the movie.
Oh.
And the band continued on after Freddie Mercury passed.
That would be a cool thing too, guys. We should take
Bohemian Rhapsody 2, which is the Adam.
So I'm a huge Queen fan, and so I know what they got, not everything, but what they got right and what they got wrong in the movie. Stu is a huge Crew fan, so I'm curious if you could do that with The Dirt. What they got right, what they got wrong.
Probably 80% was fictional,
or at least blown out of proportion, like made it a lot more.
It
like,
was based.
Well, they change a lot of times. They change timelines and stuff to make it. So, like in Bohemian Rhapsody, they said a few things that just aren't true. First of all, the band never split up. They kind of went on to do some solo projects for a little bit, but there was no. We split up and then we came back together at Live Aid. That's not true. That's just not true. Also, Freddie. Like his timeline of when he found out he had AIDS and all that's not legit either. The band didn't know for a long time that he had AIDS. Like, he didn't die from AIDS till the 90s, and he didn't announce it to anyone until shortly before that. So a lot of that is just, they fictionalize it for the movie. Even how they met is not entirely accurate and just stuff like that. They dramatize it for movies. But overall, a lot of it was true. I've always been curious about The Dirt. I'm one of those people that, like, I can go see a movie based on a true story and enjoy it, but then I always want to go and read what the true story was, and then I want to see, like, oh, how much of it was similar and how much of it did they... I'll give you a good example. The Greatest Showman is a wonderful movie, but in real life, P.T. Barnum was a piece of shit.
He was a huge
he's a
dick.
Fucking asshole.
He was a monster.
And that movie is almost in a big chunk of that movie is just made up. So don't expect that to be the real life.
And they
story.
Weren't singing the entire time either.
They weren't?
I don't think so.
Well, I think they'll be singing from now on. No, nobody. Nobody's seen fucking Grey Showman.
That's not the song
from
I think of when I think of that.
But
I don't really watch musicals, so.
Well, Rewrite the Stars is one of the big ones, but also This Is Me.
This is
another
me.
Great one for that one.
The whole movie's good.
The Greatest Show. I think this is
show?
What it's called.
This is the Greatest
that's
the one
show. I think of.
I love the whole movie. Yeah. Like, I love all the music.
Yeah.
You know, but it's total bullshit movie. It's not real.
Oh, yeah.
It's not real. 42 is pretty accurate.
If you watch it as not being about P.T. Barnum.
It's great. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah.
42, the Jackie Robinson movie, is fairly accurate, and I know for a fact that Jackie Robinson's widow played a big part into why that was. They changed a couple of little things just to, for time's sake and to make it make more
That's
sense.
Something we should do for a future show.
What's that?
Sports movies.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. We've talked about this so many times.
Only if we talk about the Mighty Ducks.
I like sports.
Well, of course.
I like sports. But I'm not like a big sports guy, but I love sports movies.
I love football movies.
Football movies are great, and I'm not even a big football guy, but football movies are great.
You can do one just on hockey movies.
Hockey movies are
great. Yeah, literally.
Slapshot.
Mighty Ducks, Slapshot,
yeah. Miracle.
The one movie I haven't seen, The Goon.
Them.
I've never seen
Miracle.
The Goon.
Haven't seen Goon.
Miracle. Yeah, Miracle. Yeah. Here's a, we could, that would totally be
Mighty Ducks 2, Mighty Ducks 3.
No, stop it. Just the Mighty Ducks series. The series. Mighty Ducks the cartoon.
Mighty Ducks the lunchbox.
So these are just a few of the movies
Scott
we talked
about. Suck to Blow.
I wanted to talk about this. You know, I would love to do an episode where we talk about, I lost my train of thought. It's fine.
Yeah, one of those strokes again.
Trust me, it happens with age.
It does happen with age. So by the way, happy birthday, Stu, for all our listeners out there. Stu recently had a birthday.
Nearing the half century mark.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Nearing. I got a couple of years.
Get that card in the mail.
Yeah,
saying you get the
one benefit,
the discounts.
So I want to kind of pointed it out earlier. We are on YouTube now. All of these go out there on YouTube. All these episodes go up on YouTube. But on top of that, we only have one channel, but we're about to split into two channels that are kind of sister channels. One channel is going to be all of this, all of the mixtape stuff, all of our episodes and certain interviews, which, by the way, we have a couple of great interviews coming up. I'll tease about that in a second. And then the other channel is going to be I've been doing movie updates, like breaking news and stuff about upcoming movies. And we're going to add to that. We're going to start doing some, Matt is talking about doing some movie reviews of, and these are like 10 minutes or less kind of videos of older movies. We're going to discuss movies and stuff. And those two channels are going to be kind of combined. They're all on one. So if you want to go over and check it out, please do. We're on TikTok as well. You can watch those videos on TikTok, but please go over and check it out. Like I said, please, patronize us.
God.
It's the reason everything happens. Contact. Let's make contact. You started it.
He was doing
TV.
He was doing the MTV.
I know what he was doing.
I turned it into 3-2-1 contact.
So
and then you went with the theme song.
We're also on the Fosse book. You can check us out there, and the Twitter X. And you can check us out there as well.
I like that better.
Twitter X. That's just where.
Maybe they should have just changed
X Twitter. We're there as well, so you can check us out on all of those. So I mentioned I just got to do a really cool interview. Matt just did an interview, which is up on our YouTube, which is Johnny Manchild and the Poor Bastards. They are a smaller band that are climbing, and they are fantastic. So please go check it out. Johnny was a cool dude. We actually got to do an interview with him a couple months ago, but there was a whole thing, not so much on our part. We decided there was some issues going on, and we decided we were going to scrap that and let him do a whole new interview. But I couldn't be there for it. So Matt got to do that one. And then I just got, and that one is up. You can go over and check that out. We will be releasing the audio on that soon, too. Then I got to do an interview with somebody. The time it fell, I was only one available. I'm not allowed to post it yet. We have to wait for about a month.
Can we even announce it?
Well, I think I can announce it.
Okay. Well, real quick, is Stu aware of something
else?
Oh,
yeah. I sent it to him. Yeah. He got a fun birthday surprise.
I love that.
Because we got to interview a certain band on the show, it happened to be on Stewie's birthday, and I got him to do a birthday shout out for Stewie, which was really cool. But we need to wait to release the actual interview until they've got an album dropping, and they're going to be going on tour, and that is Collective Soul. Collective Soul. We got to interview Will Turpin from Collective Soul, and that will be up here in a few weeks. And yeah, he did a birthday shout out to Stewie, and I got to send that to Stu on his birthday. I thought that was really cool of him. Really great dude. Really great band. Like I said, they're going to be touring this summer, so you can check that out. But they got a new album about to drop, so we will be dropping our interview right about the same time.
Who are they supposed to be touring with, you know?
Because I talked to him.
Look it up.
Is it Heart?
No. You said that, and I'm like, I mean, yeah, because he and I had the discussion of who he's touring with. It's Hootie. Hootie and the Blowfish. It's Hootie and the Blowfish. It's Hootie. They're touring with Hootie. Hootie.
That's why Kevin couldn't be here, by the way.
Hootie, he's out touring right with now. Collective Soul right now. We couldn't have him on the show. Yeah, they're going to be touring with Hootie and the Blowfish. And somebody else is, I think, going to be open. Oh, Gavin. What's his face? Gavin.
Rossdale?
I'll be your crying shoulder. Gavin McGraw. Yeah, that guy.
Ooh, Counting Crows are also coming to Riverbend Music Center.
We know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Trust me, we are aware. We keep up over here to see what we can go see. It's always hard for me in the summer. I've got a couple of concerts lined up.
Sarah McLachlan.
Have my electric.
She sold out.
We have our Joan Jett and Alanis Morissette tickets, mm-hmm. and we have our Electric Light Orchestra. Well, I have my Electric Light Orchestra tickets so far, and there'll be more coming up. So.
And I got Foo Fighter tickets.
Foo Fighters. Don't you mean? Fighters. And we have Aerosmith tickets. We just don't know what the fuck is going on with that because they canceled the show.
Oh, Edwin McCain, not Gavin DeGraw.
Yeah, that's what I said. You said it wrong. It wasn't me. I got it right. No one's going to go back and check me.
Facts don't matter on the internet.
All right, guys. Yeah. That's all we got for this week. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Casey will probably be back with us next week, we hope. And we've got a really interesting show coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Did we ever tease what the next show is going to be about when we know?
No.
No? Let's if you're not. Into if you're into 90s shit, this is the next week is going to be a fun one for you. And
I
you want to talk
lot, I took a lot of shits in the 90s.
You want to talk about some bombs. Some are going to be
like do shits
great probably. Movies and some are going to be bombs and we are looking forward to talking about them. So please joining us again next week. For the mixtape.
Nice cover up.
And yeah, I think that's all we got. Guys, we love you. And until next, we have the opportunity to speak to all you fine folks at home. Remember to always stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Oh, you suck.
And cut.
There are times that you feel like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams. 'Cause you wish you were a Muppet, but you can't play the music, and you can't light the lights, and it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your favorite mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, 'cause right now it's all you've got. Stay.